Lovelies, welcome to Almost Married, the podcast for all the brides and grooms to learn all the tips and tricks to plan the wedding of your dreams. I'm your host, Allie Armstrong, and I'm so excited you joined us and to be a small part of your big day. So welcome back to the Almost Married podcast. My name is Allie Armstrong and I'm your host. And today I have Stephanie and Emily joining me from Michael Hill Jewelers all the way from Brisbane, Australia. Stephanie, Emily, thank you for being on the podcast today with me.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so happy that you took some time out of your day. I know it's 8 a.m. over there in Australia, I think, and appreciate you getting up bright and early and answering some of my questions.
Our pleasure.
So I wanted to just kind of like dive in and talk to you about engagement rings, because obviously, I mean, a lot of my listeners are already engaged, perhaps some hope to be, you know, engaged soon. Is engagement ring trends, you know, a thing? Or do you see engagement ring trends that change year after year? And if so, you know, for this year, for 2019, or even going into 2020, what would you say is the most popular style that you're seeing?
It's a really interesting question, because I know that people, when they go to buy that the ring, right, they're like, oh my gosh, this is forever. I need to get something that I love that will stand the test of time, right? And it's true that, you know, a solitaire is a very popular choice because of the simplicity. But we also see really popular a style for us is the halo, because it can, you know, it's that a halo is when you have like a center stone and you have smaller stones around it.
Mm-hmm.
That adds that sort of extra sparkle, but it also makes the center stone look larger. So it can actually get sort of a larger looking ring for the person's budget. So we see that. We're also seeing that couples are really stepping into more vintage, intricate style. And it's really interesting to us, because we love how, like, you know, it used to be very limited. People would have a solitaire or they have a halo, you know, and it'd be very, or, you know, simple, right? Or, you know, a solitaire with shoulder stones on the band.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing now is couples really stepping into something a lot more intricate and vintage, or just that's more them. And we love seeing that as well. We are also seeing people stepping into colored stone choices versus diamond choices.
Yeah, gemstones.
And you know why we're seeing this, which we find it fascinating, as millennials are considering how they're going to spend their money. Many of them are making different decisions about the ring. They're sort of thinking, I want a beautiful ring that will last forever, but I don't want to spend our house deposit on it.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Or something like that, whatever the thing is. Or I would like to spend this much on my ring, and I would like to spend the other portion on an experience that we can have together that we'll remember for a lifetime. Experience is a really big deal as well. So we're finding that we're responding to that as well, with, you know, a vast range of styles and options for our couples.
I'm a wedding planner, so I'm also seeing a lot of gemstones on my bride's fingers, and they're beautiful, and often they're larger rings, so they are very eye-catching.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, I'm a huge gemstone fan, so I have personally like a morganite ring and an aquamarine, which I love, and I love that I'm seeing more people kind of go the gemstone route as well. I think, you know, it's 2019, and anything really goes across the board in weddings these days.
I agree. And I think that the that sort of wanting to sort of like personalize their engagement ring to them as a couple and them as an individual, I think that's showing through in the selection of gemstones.
Yeah. And going, you know, even a classic route, just to share a personal story, I had a solitaire diamond. I actually ended up melting down my setting and recreating it and adding a couple of halos not too long ago. So it's good to be confident in your initial decision so you don't end up in my shoes and having to redesign. So I think being thoughtful about what works well as a couple is really important. Consideration. And just to back up, Stephanie and Emily, can you share with us what your roles are at Michael Hill? Like, you're so knowledgeable. What do you do for Michael Hill?
So I am the general manager, global general manager for marketing, brand, and customer experience. So I really work in the area of understanding our customers and exactly what they want and what they think they might want next, which is the really intriguing part, looking at trends and understanding why people behave the way they do so that we can support them with the products and services that they'll be looking for in the jewelry category.
Okay.
And I'm one of the buyers for Michael Hill. I specialize in the bridal area and work really closely with Steph as well to, you know, look forward to the future trends and, you know, constantly looking at what's selling within the company and seeing where we can go and where we can expand on, please our customers and get them excited. So
that sounds like such a fun job.
That's awesome. It is pretty good.
So back to the rings. I know, you know, we're talking about gemstones. Are there any shapes that you're seeing that are more popular or perhaps, you know, in the long run that are the more classic choice?
Yeah, I mean, the more classic choice is the round, brilliant solitaire. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we have a number of, such a classic choice that people would really like subtle differences that they can have with their solitaire. So it might be like the shape of the band. It might be the shape of what we call the basket. The basket is the metal element that the stone sits in.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into a Michael Hill store, you have a choice of so probably up to 10 different solitaire styles, even though it's a single stone. So that's always very interesting for couples to have a look at that and see what their moment is.
Mm-hmm.
Solitaires, round brilliance are definitely there, but also a lot of couples favour the pear and the oval shape. I have an oval shaped diamond, and the reason I like it is because it gives me more of a flatter spread. Because I can be a little bit on the move a lot, and having a ring that's sort of higher set would get caught in my life, basically. So it suits me to have a flatter setting, and I love the oval shape. We see a lot of couples loving the pear, mm-hmm. and I know that we've seen a lot of that out there with celebrities as well. So, yeah, so that's what we see shape-wise.
I think that's a really good tip that you just mentioned about the height and, you know, how the basket is on a ring. And for people out there that are, you know, currently shopping around for that perfect engagement ring, thinking about what profession the person that's going to be wearing that ring, you know, what they do for a living and how busy they may be, because you're right, you know, rings can get caught and often they're not worn in a professional setting because of that reason. So that's a really good tip.
Yeah, and that is my number one tip to brides is, like, know yourself. Like, don't think, oh, I've always wanted that type of ring, I'll be different or things will change or I'll be more gentle or slow down or whatever. That is not reality. Buy a ring that you can just love on every day, because I put this thing on every day and I wear it like anything, like just like every day. And it is a part of who I am and how I move in the world, just like my marriage is. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to note.
Absolutely. And do you take your ring off at night? Would you recommend people do take the ring off while they're sleeping?
Look, we do. And get this. So we recommend that you take them off at night. A couple of reasons why. You don't have to always if you're comfortable with that. But it's good to let your skin breathe, because it's still like a piece of metal wrapped around your skin, and you'll sometimes find you might get a little irritation if you just wear it too much, because mm-hmm. bacteria can get caught under it. But if you do take it off at night, my number one tip is to make sure you have a little ring dish that's always in the same place, and that you always put it in that ring dish or whatever it is that you have or place.
Yes.
Because, like, the moment your life gets busy or, you know, your bed clothes sweep across it and it gets knocked under the bed and then sucked up in a vacuum, or lo and behold, you have children like I did. And can I just tell you, toddlers love sparkly things and they put them in their little toy box. That has happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just sharing that experience, ladies. It is really important to have a ring holder that's in the same place. And then when you have kids, out of reach of children.
I second that. I lost my very first engagement ring, and I do believe it was my 3-year-old nephew at the time that decided to play hide and seek with it, except we never found it. So that definitely...
Oh my gosh, quite cool.
Yeah, they definitely a ring dish, a designated spot, really, really good tip. We'll get right back to today's interview, but first I wanted to tell you about an exciting new workshop series that I'll be hosting for people just like you, brides and grooms-to-be, that are planning their own dream wedding and need a little guidance on the what, why, how, when of wedding planning. Let me be clear, weddings can be daunting, overwhelming, expensive, and stressful, but they can also be so much fun if you can manage to plan a wedding within your budget, with all the people you love the most, and without any last-minute surprises. And I want to help you take the stress and fear out of the planning and make you feel prepared for what's to come. I've taken my decades of professional wedding planning experience and created a custom one-day crash course that will walk you in detail through all the steps you need to cover. The workshops will be starting this spring in Vancouver, but we will be touring throughout North America as well. So if you're interested and want us to come to your city, let me know. You will find more info on what's included in the workshop and can buy your tickets on my website, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. That's Allie with a Y, AllieArmstrongEvents.com. Okay, now back to today's interview. So say a couple or a bride or a groom, they visit Michael Hill, they want to get a ring custom made. How long does it take to have a ring made? And is that a process that you offer where they can come in and custom select the stone and the setting and have that completely custom created specifically for them?
So basically it takes between 2 and 6 weeks. It really just depends on the actual chosen design and the stone. Because remember, if you're choosing a gemstone or a diamond, it's about rarity. So you may choose a stone that there may be only X amount around, and we go on the diamond hunt or the stone hunt, which is so much fun. That might take a little bit longer, but not crazy amounts of time. So that's in the 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. With regard to personalizing the style, with most of our styles or many of our engagement rings, you can choose your metal and you can choose your stone, your center stone. So you might want to, you might choose a diamond that is has a little bit more color in it, or you might choose one you want it to be flawless and a bit colorless and quite glassy looking. So that's where it really is important for the couple to think about what they want and what they like.
And speaking on, you know, color, cut, clarity, carat, can you describe to the listeners kind of what each of those things, each of those characteristics mean, and what is really important to know and to note as, you know, one is shopping for an engagement ring?
Okay, so my first tip is do not get overwhelmed, bamboozled, or feel imprisoned by the four C's, which is cut, clarity, and carat, okay? Be driven by your taste and your love and the things that are important to you, because we find a lot of brides who are like, I've got to have a certain cut, or I've got to have a certain size, or all these different things. And the thing is, what you've got to have is the ring that you and your partner love. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So that's my first tip, because we it should not be a stressful thing. So let me talk about the four C's. So cut is, I keep it really simple, guys. You can get into the technical diamond buy it language, but cut to me is all about the sparkle, okay? So I love a sparkle, right? So to me, sparkle is really important.
Absolutely.
Right? So a diamond sparkle depends on its cut. So the more facets it has, the sparkly it's going to be. So we have a diamond called the Southern Star. It has 65 facets. That's huge.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the average facet number?
The average is 58. So 65 is just that next level up, and we own that cut as well. So it's just, the sparkle and the scintillation that happens with that stone is fabulous.
And you can, see it. It's, twinkly, and I like a twinkly ring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that depends what that person wants. Color is another thing. So we talked about cut. We're going to talk about color. Color is absolutely what it says. It's about the color of the diamond. You think, hang on, diamonds are white. When you start looking at diamonds, you can see there's a variation between colorless, which is that glassy clear, through to sort of champagne-y, kind of ambery look. And that's really popular. I love it too. It's a really warm, earthy look.
Mm.
So colour's absolutely about what you prefer. And that's when you hear people talking about, D colour, F colour, G colour. So D is the most colourless, and that runs right through to Z,
Okay. Which
are more colourful. So, just think about it like this. And again, none of these are good, none of these are bad. It is totally personal choice. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So clarity. So clarity is about the sort of the magnification. Like, what can you see when you look into it? Okay, so the clarity might be this is where we talk about inclusion. you know, you'll hear them at that in the diamond language. You start going to stores and you go, what the heck is an inclusion? So you can have inclusions, which are just natural facets and inclusions from the formation of the stone, from the natural diamond, right?
We like to call it nature's footprint.
Okay.
Perfect. I love nature's footprint. I love, and I do, I genuinely like a stone that looks like a stone and doesn't look like a piece of glass. That's me. There are other customers who like it looking very glassy. So I love slightly included and very slightly included, which is handy because they're less expensive.
Right.
And the reason they're less expensive is not because they're not as good. It just means they're more of them. It's about rarity, okay? So they're a little less rare, and I'm okay with that. So, and then carat. We talk about this being about the weight of the diamond. A lot of people think it means size.
Yeah, I thought so.
But you can have a 2-carat ring. I know, right? So often it's a misconception, right? So think about this. You can have a 2-carat diamond cut in a certain way, and it looks not dissimilar to the same size of a very well-cut scintillating 1.5-carat or 1.7-carat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if that's why you've just got it, that's why, you know, I talked earlier about I've got an oval ring. You know, I don't know how many carats it is. It's probably over one. I don't know. Emily's looking at it. But it looks like a big stone because I like that cut and it gave me a better spread. So it's less about weight. For me, it's more about weight than size when we talk about carats. So I've got like a smaller weight but a bigger size looking ring. So here's a tip for couples though. Often you will get, you know, the 1-carat solitaire is like a real benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
You can get what we call just under 1-carat sizes, like a 0.8 or a 0.7 that are much better buying but give you the look of a 1-carat. Do you know? Like, yeah. It still looks like one. Like, the naked eye cannot tell the difference, but your bank account can. So it really just depends on what's important to you.
Amazing tips. And who would have thought? I didn't realize how important the cut is in relation to the sparkle. So thanks for sharing all those incredible tips with us. And you ended on the note about a bank account, which is a question I had in my mind as you were sharing these details with us. Is there an average engagement ring cost? Like, how does one, you know, start to determine how much they should spend on an engagement ring?
So we are finding that the average engagement ring at Michael Hill is running at about $2,000. So that's what we're finding couples are spending.
Okay.
And we have incredible no-interest-free, zero-down credit options, so it helps couples into really whatever they want. But again, and people say, oh, you know, back in the day you talk about, oh, a certain number of months' salary to put towards the ring.
Right.
I mean, that's a nice guide if you want it, but it's really, what can the couple afford to have something that's beautiful and that they love and to continue to have the life they love as well? Without being, you know, mortgaged to the eyeballs with, you know, a ring they can't afford.
Yeah, there's
how I feel.
That's awesome. And there can be a lot of pressure for a couple, you know, about the size of their ring.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I love that. It's just, you know, the people need to just, you know, remove the noise and do what works best for their own bank account and them as a couple. So I want to get into a weird question, but it was on my mind back in the day. And, you know, blood diamonds, non-conflict diamonds. I mean, is this an important thing to consider? And how do you know if you're actually purchasing a diamond that is non-conflict?
So, yes, it is. Well, it's very important to us.
Yes.
And we only sell non-conflict diamonds. And how we know that we're doing that is we have a very detailed sourcing, approach to sourcing our diamonds. So we know what mine they've come from. And that is absolutely followed, it's audited. We are also a member of the Responsible Jewelry Council. Now, to become a member of the Responsible Jewelry Council is really hard. You have to have so many standards, meeting so many standards around your social responsibility, around your climate, eco, economic responsibility to your customers and to the villages that you're actually working through. So we meet those. It takes about, oh gosh, I don't know, it took a whole team of people just to get us the paperwork done, which it just goes to show that ethical and human rights, social and environmental practices are really important to us and something that we stand behind and invest in every single year. So I think it's a really big deal, and I think it's great that it's a big deal to people, you know, and you can always count on that at Michael Hill.
And, you know, if one were to walk into just any jewelry store, can they ask that jewelry store, you know, to assure them that those are, you know, non-conflict diamonds? Do they legally have to disclose whether they are or are not? Or how can one be really sure if they're not at Michael Hill? Do you have any tips for those that, you know, might be curious about that one to ensure that they are non-conflict?
Yeah, I mean, ask them if they're a member of the Responsible Jewelry Council.
Okay.
Ask them if they purchase their diamonds under the covenant of the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme. So the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme is an international collection of buyers, diamond buyers, that absolutely sign on the dotted line that these are conflict-free with mines, and only deal with mines that are conflict-free.
Okay, that was really good
advice. So getting them to show you their warranties and guarantees is really important, mm-hmm. because people can say, oh, of course we're conflict-free.
Right.
But like, if that's really important to you, you want to see the paperwork.
Mm-hmm. And as a consumer, I would hope that it is an important factor when people are shopping. So thanks for sharing those tips with us. And I know we talked about diamonds and gemstones, but the metal, are we seeing, you know, a certain trend in like silver, gold, white gold? You know, what are we seeing these days? What's most popular?
Oh gosh, all of the above.
Depends. Personal preference.
I feel like over the decades, like, you know, sort of the 80s is all about yellow gold, and the 70s is all about white gold or silver, and, you know, platinum was in the 90s and all that sort of thing. We see a lot of white metals still in North America and Canada. So it would be white gold, platinum. We don't see silver for engagement rings. It's just because of the tarnishing and the wear.
Mm.
It's not as strong as white gold and platinum. But you know what? Having said that, just in the last 6 months, we've seen a resurgence in yellow gold.
Mm, yeah.
Very interestingly, we have like a big resurgence, right?
Yeah. I think it's a combined what we're seeing. Definitely we're seeing white gold and we're seeing yellow gold, but also what's coming through is some rose gold for bridal, which is really exciting. I mean, it's probably been a bit of a scarier area for customers to get into in the bridal realm, whereas, you know, it's a lot easier choosing that tone in for fashion pieces. But it's been really exciting to see that a lot of customers in particular are wanting a rose gold band for their solitaire or a beautiful cluster piece highlighting the rose gold metal around it, which really brings out the diamonds really nicely as well. So that's something that we're quite excited about, because we can choose some really exciting, beautiful designs on that color as well.
And do you ever see mixed metals? So say someone has a classic white gold band on their engagement ring, you know, have you seen someone then get a rose gold wedding band or mix the metals? Is that a thing?
Same? Yeah.
Okay, because in event design, I don't mind mixing metals. I actually quite like that look. So I was curious about jewelry and if that was a thing.
Oh, totally. And what we're also seeing is our couples are stacking different rings, like, so basically they'll get one band in one metal and another band in another metal and put it either side.
Mm-hmm.
We are seeing a lot more people actually spending more on their wedding bands. Like, we're finding that particularly Canadian consumers are spending at least half the value of their engagement ring on their wedding band.
Wow, that's a big number.
And having wedding bands that are more embellished. Yeah, I know. That's a big, big shift that's happened in the last sort of 12 to 18 months. And I think also, like, I've noticed it myself, and I don't know about you, but I have a diamond wedding band. And if I am, like, I don't know, going hiking, whatever, I'll just wear my wedding band or something else. And I'm so, and some days it just is chic. You wear your wedding band, you stack it up with a few other fine fashion jewelry bands, and it's really cool for that particular outfit and that day, because, you know, you're married a long time, ladies. It's good to mix it up.
Definitely. Absolutely. And then even on, you know, the 10th anniversary, you can just keep adding to that finger, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Stack that right up.
We are stackers here. And also, just by the way, the push present, any anniversary, any choose any Mother's Day, any birthday, like go for it.
Bring it on.
Gotcha.
And I love that thought. You know, I often will leave my engagement ring at home and just wear my band. So I do love that look as well. So, and I think some people actually, the band is an oversight. I've had a couple of clients recently be like, where do I go for a band? I completely forgot. It just, you know, wasn't their priority. You know, they forgot about it. There's all this attention on the engagement ring and then you're planning the wedding and then suddenly you need the bands as well. But I think that given your point, those are equally important because oftentimes, you know, I think women especially will just wear their band, you know, for those certain occasions.
Oh, totally. We've totally seen that.
And is that the same time frame for the bands? Because I think that just, you know, what I just mentioned, if someone, it wasn't at the top of their to-do list and they're getting married in a couple of months, is that something that they can more easily go to the jewelry store and purchase? Or is that the same kind of 2 to 6 week time frame for a wedding band as well?
To be safe, 2 to 6, just in case they choose one that we have to size, okay. Or they might want to choose one and switch a few things out or choose it in a different color,
mm-hmm.
Metal.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would just say don't leave it more than a month before. And besides, you're so busy with the wedding, get it done.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things you don't need to worry about.
Yes. No, good advice. And on that, on sizing, because, you know, do you have any tips on, you know, how to ensure the right size ring? You know, can you share any advice there?
I just think, like, for us, what we notice is, like, a lot of couples some brides lose a lot of weight before the wedding, and that's okay, but you should just, it doesn't matter really, what matters is that it doesn't slip over the knuckle,
okay.
that first knuckle, that's what matters. So as long as that knuckle's holding it in place, they should be good. And then we find that some brides don't like it, you know, they like their rings steady, and so they probably get a snugger fit, therefore, mm-hmm. it's so personal.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of, from the winter, you know, also from the winter to the summer, their fingers will sort of like swell and go back down again. So just be mindful of that as well. But really, the knuckle doesn't change. That's your guide.
Okay, great. And insurance, everyone, buy the ring and get the insurance right away. Because, you know, stuff happens and you don't want to stress about having to replace that big, expensive piece.
Correct.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else that you can think of that I haven't asked you that you feel is important to share?
I think that what it's really important for bridals, for brides and couples to spend the time sort of enjoying the experience of buying the ring and not to feel like stressed or pressured. Like, just really enjoy it. Make a Pinterest board, look at the styles you like, go try a few on, enjoy the experience. We see a lot of stressed couples, don't we? And it's just like, you know what? This is a great moment in life. It's one of the most exciting moments in life.
Yes.
Go and have fun. Enjoy it. You can't do anything wrong. You know, it's metal and precious gemstones. Like, these things have value. Just go and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. Well, Stephanie, Emily, it's such a pleasure having both of you on today and sharing your expertise and your advice and your tips. And I appreciate you calling in all the way from Australia. And for those that want to check you out on Instagram, I believe it's at Michael Hill J. Is that correct? Where they can find you on social media?
That's right.
Okay, perfect. And then your website.
Yeah, and if we've got any customers, and our website is michaelhill.ca. So, and then if we've got any customers out there who are already Michael Hill customers and they want to share their Michael Hill, they can go to my Michael Hill on Instagram. And tell us their story. We love
your ring.
Tell us your ring. Tell us your story. We love hearing from our customers.
Awesome. That's great. And do they use the hashtag for that if they want to share with you, if they're posting a photo?
Yeah, hashtag my Michael Hill.
Okay, perfect. Well, Stephanie, Emily, you enjoy your day in beautiful, sunny Australia. And thank you again for joining the Almost Married podcast.
Thank you, Ellie. Thanks, Ellie. Bye.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me today for another episode of Almost Married. I hope you all feel a little more prepared and excited for planning the wedding of your dreams. If you have any questions you'd love me to cover or ideas for future episodes, I would absolutely love to hear from you. And you can connect with me on Instagram at Events by Ally, that's Ally, or on my website, www.allyarmstrongevents.com, where we have tons of other resources on the website for you to help you create a beautiful, personal, and stress-free wedding day. And if you are someone inclined, you can also sign up for my workshop series on my website as well. Last but definitely not least, I would be so appreciative if you left a rating and review of this podcast in your favorite podcast app. It really does help get the word out to other almost married couples who need a little help along the way, and better yet, share this podcast with other brides or grooms-to-be. Thank you again, lovelies, and I hope you join me back here next week where we'll tackle another need-to-know wedding challenge. Bye for now.